That's Riley B. King, always in our hearts as B.B. King, with one of his most famous songs, The Thrill Is Gone. It was featuring Tracy Chapman. And that's an interesting thing I want to say about B.B. King. You know, a lot of these musicians, they had a rough road to hoe, and they did it, but they also brought along other talent as well. And we see that right within the music industry, a lot of musicians taking younger folk coming up under their wings and partnering with them. It's just a wonderful thing to see. And this happens to be one of my favorite interpretations of B.B. King's The Thrill Is Gone. As you know, he too is gone. He died peacefully in his sleep at his home in Las Vegas last Thursday at the age of 89. He'd been ailing for some time. And of course, by the time he made his exit, there is no question that B.B. King accounted for himself along with his legendary guitar, which he named Lucille. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Monday, May the 18th, 2015. And we're going to do a kind of hodgepodge today because I've got a couple of things to catch up on. We missed each other a bit owing to lightning storms that knocked everything out. And we just are now back on track. The great behemoth in my neck of the woods, Comcast, has fixed things, and so we're back in action. So we will catch up, because we didn't get to do our Free Your Mind Friday on Friday, so we'll do a little bit of that, but a couple of things that I wanted to catch up on as well. President Obama today is going to be making the announcement, unless he has already done so, but he's expected to announce, of course, that there will be, from this point forward, police departments across the country won't just be able to put their hands on military equipment. He's putting an end to that with a measure that he has intended to sign into law, banning certain types of military-style equipment for local law enforcement agencies, local police departments. And this includes heavy stuff, you know, the armored vehicles, bayonets, grenade launchers, camouflage uniforms, large caliber weapons and ammunition, and other types of sophisticated weaponry that is now par for the course with many police departments across the country. And we saw that. This is one of the outgrowths, actually, of the rebellion in Ferguson, Missouri, where we saw with the declaration of emergency law, state of emergency, in the aftermath of the shooting death of Michael Brown, that the governor imposed a state of emergency, called out the National Guard, and with that, a lot of weaponry. And it was widely viewed as what's wrong with policing in the United States. What's also wrong with policing, and that is that these weapons suggested an attitude within law enforcement that certain communities are pretty much war zones, and therefore you operate with that mentality. And of course, with these billions of dollars being allocated in the first place to acquire these military weapons and gadgets, all of which, of course, are aimed at shooting, killing, in some way or the other, putting people down, what happens to the so-called surplus? Well, of course, we know that they end up in other countries many times, but they also end up in other places in the United States. And we have seen this time and again, and mostly we've seen it first, of course, evidencing itself in communities of color. And when people brought that to the attention of the country, they said, well, you know, there were all kinds of excuses for it from the police commissioners and others saying, well, this is what we need. Things have changed in our communities, and the communities that we police require a kind of heavier hand. We have to have an upper hand on the kinds of weapons that we ourselves are facing. And so it calls for all of these military weapons. We did a program last year in which we spelled out what is going on with the billions of dollars that these police departments are getting in terms of the military weapons, military-style weapons, and the capacity to do even more and more damage in communities and their practice. I saw a video not too long ago that approximately 2 years before Ferguson erupted, that practice runs were being done in communities adjacent to Ferguson, Missouri, with heavy armored tanks. They were doing their practice runs. Now, you say to yourself, well, don't they have some kind of a military place where they would do a practice run? But no, they were practicing, literally practicing, the maneuverability of these tanks, armored tanks, in local communities. How would these tanks, how do the drivers of these tanks maneuver through city streets? You may recall about 2 years ago as well, I did a piece on a lecture, actually. I played a tape of a military expert talking about the venues of war being changed. And the venue of war is moving out of their traditional theaters into what he called urban areas. And he was talking specifically about the so-called Middle East. But he also said that it is going to be a worldwide shift because the wars are going to be fought in hubs of technology. And the hubs of technology are in urban areas. And why? Because technology would be one of the key factors in these urban rebellions. People are going to be using the internet. They're going to be using all manners of sophisticated ways of countering oppression, or that is being anticipated by the government. So this is not something that was just, it just happened that, you know, there was all this equipment on hand, and gee, well, what are we going to do? And some police department said, well, give it to us. No. When these things are occurring, it is not just by happenstance. It is by people who are studying these things. These things are not just, you know, a coincidence. They study these things. And then we have these police commissioners who have the mentality that they literally are generals. The police are operating and have been operating literally as a military presence in most communities, especially communities of color across the country. Police commissioners liken themselves to, you know, a major, major military official. And they are commanding an army. The former mayor of the city of New York, Michael Bloomberg, used to refer to the police department of New York City as the nation, as the world's fifth largest army. In other words, he wasn't just the mayor of the city of New York. He was a commander of an army, and that's the mentality that pervaded throughout the United States, that the police are not there to basically guarantee safety and all the good old 1950s notions that people had about police. But the police really are a military force. They are a rule unto themselves. And there's very little that is being done to rein them in. Now, they can talk about reform all they want, but what do we see as reform? The president's response today is, well, we're going to ban certain kinds of vehicles and certain kinds of military equipment from ending up in police departments across the country. Well, I'm sure that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. But does it really address the question about the function of police, the mentality of police, the administration of police, the policies that they follow or don't follow? Are we hearing from the Justice Department about this? I raised a question already. This business of reform, what is the yield on all of this effort? Well, let's take a look at Missouri. After all of that, rebellion, the protracted struggle, the contention, the nation coming to grips with these questions, not only about the killing of a young man by a police officer, but also about what is the function of police? Who is regulating them? After all of that, and all of the cry and the hue and cry and the reports even by the Justice Department itself, we need to have reform. Okay, so what happens? What happens is that the Missouri legislature basically shut down last Friday with nothing done, no bills at all passed, having anything to do with the issues raised by the people during this rebellion in Missouri, specifically relating to out-of-control police. Not one legislative measure was passed. Not one. It wasn't that they weren't there. It wasn't that nobody wrote them up. They had at least 60 bills, some form or the other, were going to address these questions raised by the conduct of police that even the Justice Department said was out of control in Ferguson, Missouri. The legislature just called it a day and said, well, we're done with this session. Nothing, not one bill made it through. Not one. So we see again, we have an articulated problem. The people took to the streets. We had measures put on the table. We had even the Justice Department report basically echoing the sentiments of the people, corroborating what they've said. And we have the legislature saying, it isn't important. We don't care about what you think. We're done. There's nothing that we see that needs to be done here. There's no law. There's no new measure that we need to put into place. So this is what happens to reforms. This is what happens. And we all agree. Missouri was a touchstone point. We all agree, people were very agitated, and correctly so, rightfully so. And look what happened. Nothing in the way of reforms. And today, the Democratic president is going to look. It's all about PR. It's all about how it looks and how it sounds, but not what it is, right? The president is going to say, well, I'm responding to the people. I am not going to allow tanks just willy-nilly to be sold to local police departments. From now on, they're going to have to go through a kind of closer scrutiny. You'll have to explain why you want a tank. It's not that you can't get them. You just have to explain it a little bit more. And if you happen to break the rules, according to the president's own reforms, if a city happens to break the rules, they get, you know, a 60-day period of shame, essentially. And in those 60 days, they got to come up with something that explains why they broke the rules and promise to not break the rules anymore. And so after that cooling off period, they could apply again for some more tanks and bullets and whatever it is that they're not supposed to have according to this new piece, this new measure that he's putting into place. So it's all a game. Bottom line, it's a game with such huge holes in it that it renders all of this to just being a joke. It's a sick, sick joke. I raise this question because, of course, it's political season, you see. 2016 is around the corner. And even this issue that was so prominent and still remains so prominent in the minds of the nation as a whole, and especially communities of color, they treat it the same old way. It just gets a lot of play, a lot of television cameras, and a lot of nice coverage and whatnot. And CNN is going to report it, and MSNBC, and whoever else is out there. And the bottom line is there is no reform, but that's not going to be the story. It is about the system playing games, and of course being permitted to play games, because the system understands something that we don't, and I've been talking about this. They know that we are not going to stay the course. They know we too are playing games. Our leaders are playing games. And more than anything else, they know there is no consequence to them playing games. There's no consequence. Nobody's going to pay a penalty. There's no political problem here. They don't see themselves in any way standing even the remotest chance that they'll get their butts kicked and kicked out of office. So we come back to this point in this never-ending circle. What are we going to do about it? Everybody is playing games, whether you're the Democratic president or you're the Republican governor of Missouri. It's a joke. Whether you are the just resigned U.S. Attorney General or the new one coming in, it's the same thing. Just tell them what they need to hear. Give them something that looks like you're acting one way when in fact you're not even remotely connected to any of this stuff, to making any changes at all. You could play everybody. You could play them off. Because they don't have standing power. They don't have lasting power, and they can't do you anything. They can't do anything to you. You see? Here is a seminal issue. Everybody agrees about that. This is a huge problem. This is a national problem to the point that even the Urban League, the National Urban League, said it's a point of crisis. It's a crisis. And look how they respond to the crisis. The people are doing their job. Well, I have an issue there still, because they believe their job is done. But the people have caused the response. They have caused it by putting themselves out in the street, by saying, this is a problem, and we want it to end. We want a definitive end to it. Solve it. Everybody says, oh, yes, 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 we'll solve it because we agree this is a shameful problem and we have to do something about it. And they concoct these elaborate ways of evading and avoiding and downright just ignoring, you know, a sophisticated form of ignoring it. But that's essentially the bottom line. They are not interested and they will not pay attention to this problem at all. They won't. I mean, in Missouri, we've been talking all this time about Missouri, and Missouri became the lightning rod for all of these discussions about the function of police, the administration of police. How should police function in these communities? What is the role of the police department? All these different theories about which was the best way to control a community and to interact, and the notion of, what is it, Obama and the others, and trust, the trust we had to build, and all of this nonsense. Nothing. 60 bills in front of the Missouri legislature, nothing. Nothing comes out of there. Nothing. No success at even the smallest thing. To say, all right, we have responded with these measures. And the reason I'm saying this is, of course, that the legislatures are made up of Democrats and Republicans. This is not just a crazy conservative element or the lunatic fringe. This is about the core of the duopoly, the Republicans and the Democrats, thinking exactly alike. There is no definitive difference between them and their political philosophies. They agree. They agree that the police departments of this country are basically an army and a force unto themselves. And nobody, including the President of the United States, including the U.S. Attorney General of the United States, past and present, is going to take them on. The president who has such great power says, well, as far as he's willing to go is, look, if you want a tank, you're going to have to fill out a couple of extra forms. And that's what he calls reforming the police departments of this country. He's done. He's going to make a big splash today. Later on, check your news headlines, and you will see that the president is going to be positioned as taking a very affirmative stance in behalf of the people. There's nothing happening there. It is contemptuous action at the state and local and federal levels. They just don't care. Now, that brings me to the other point. There is no way that I'm concentrating now on Missouri, all right? On Missouri, where all of these leaders decided to show up and assert themselves as leadership. You know, we are the leaders here. Okay, well, good. You have 60 measures before the state legislature in Missouri. Where were you
Where were you? Why is it that not one single measure has passed? You know, these are the questions. And therefore, the fact that not one of at least 60 made it through means that there ought to be consequences. There ought to be consequences. We don't know. We don't operate with that mindset. Other people do. The police fraternity always does. They get exactly what they want. They don't want their fellow officer indicted. Guess what? He doesn't get indicted. They don't want a conviction. Guess what? He doesn't get a conviction. But 60 bills, at least, in Missouri, that gave us this huge reminder of just where we are as a country with respect to the relationship between the police departments and communities of color specifically, but not exclusively. And here's where we are today. So, what are you going to do? What is to be done here? Another reminder that, again, the will of the people who caused all of this activity, the people who made this an issue, the people who put it front and center of the nation, they did their job. They got it there. Where's Sharpton? Where are the lawyers for these families, these aggrieved families? Where's Jesse Jackson and the National Urban League's Marc Morial talking about the great crisis? Where are you all? Sixty bills, not one makes it through. Not one. It's a disgrace. But you see, it's the kind of thing that should be the epicenter of a renewed kind of political action. And that is, how do you, in as much as these people are showing time and again to be either just marginally relevant to your existence or completely irrelevant to your existence, and worse, an active impediment to your progress, what are you going to do? What is your solution? The fact that 60 bills just went completely sideswiped. No, nobody's even bothering with these things. And they're doing this absolutely sure of no consequences at all. Then what is the solution? Because Missouri is a bellwether for how things are going to go in the nation on this question of so-called police reform. You know, we have been given time and again indications about what democracy is, and I keep telling folks, it has nothing to do with voting. Nothing. But if you choose to interpret it that way, if you choose to include voting as some kind of a major indicator of democracy, then what does this say about the need to revamp this concept? Because it's a rotten concept. It's just not holding up. It's not passing the smell test. How could you be voting and voting and voting and your schools are failing and you can't get 60 bills passed, not even one of 60, and you have lousy health care and you have very unsafe communities and you have rotten housing and you have intolerable unemployment? You're voting all the time. You're voting, and all of these things are happening. So it means that there's a disconnect here. At some point, you're going to have to admit your voting has no impact at all on your day-to-day life. Your voting has nothing to do with receiving some kind of a benefit from voting. You have to be really thick-headed to still believe that after all these decades and hundreds of years of voting, that you literally are not at all. I mean, compared to your predecessors, you're worse off in many, many ways, in critical ways. So voting is not the deal, is it? The people in Missouri, the people of Ferguson, elected their leadership. They elected the state leadership and the local leadership. They elected all these people. They voted for them. And here is an issue that literally has to do with their lives. And they couldn't find any one bill that they could point to today to say, well, at least we got 1/60th of the way. 60 bills, zero passed. It means there's something wrong. In New York City, where we had the Eric Garner case, I pointed this out all the time. You have a city council that for the first time in history has more people of color on it than at any other time. And guess what? Nothing is happening in the way of reform. They have direct authority, direct control over the mayor, even over the police commissioner. They don't have the guts to say, guess what? There will be a major hearing and the police commissioner, Bill Bratton, will be called on the carpet publicly to explain a whole bunch of things that have gone on here without any explanation. They're not going to do it. So precisely at a time that their communities theoretically are more empowered, I'm talking now just because of the numerics of it, they have more numerical representation than before, they have no power still. None. And they're settling for these games because when a huge problem occurs, a crisis occurs, as it did with the Eric Garner case, being symbolic of the long-lasting and unsolved problem of police brutality. This is not brutality. This is police murders in the city of New York. Out-of-control cops, rogue cops, cops doing whatever the heck they want to do, with people of color inordinately representing the group negatively and in most cases fatally affected. Precisely at a time that these communities have more representation locally, that is to say, more power over the systems that are oppressing them and abusing them, they have no power to call these systems into account. How do you square that? And you're voting. And this is just one of the crises that we're talking about. You want an indictment? You even want the guy just to be arrested. You can't get that. The DA is going about his business. He's going about life. He's running for Congress. You stuck there and you just said, well, you know, we marched. We got out there in the sun on a Saturday afternoon like Sharpton asked us to, and we yelled at our lung capacity at empty concrete buildings. And we therefore did a march. The power that you have, allegedly, representing you, is completely unaccountable to you. And you like it that way. Because that's what you have, and that's what you tolerate. So, we see even in Baltimore, Freddie Gray dies a horrible death. And we have the same promises, the same cycle over and over and over again. Yes, we need to have the feds come in. I explained to you that that is itself a suspect call. You don't need the feds. Not yet. In the Eric Garner case, you don't need the feds. Not yet. And you don't need the feds because the local system hasn't done its job. The local yokels have not done their job. And they have not been compelled to do their job. And they have the authority to do it because you voted for them and you gave them that authority. You did that. So let's have an accounting first at that level. Why is it that your local system can convict thousands and thousands and thousands of young men from your communities at the drop of a hat, whether they're innocent or not is not even important. But you can guarantee that just about anybody arrested by the cops will go to jail because it feeds into this prison industrial complex and it works fine and it produces its predictable result. But when it comes to police, the system just doesn't work. It just doesn't seem to work. The local people have to be called into account. Why is the City Council of New York allowing the police to operate this way? Why is it allowing the police commissioner to continue to put into effect that broken windows theory? Why is Bill Bratton not yet before this an open hearing of the City Council? Why is the mayor of the City of New York not yet before the City Council? Why are the state senators and the state members of the Assembly not really running a straight line into Governor Cuomo's office, demanding answers from him? You see, they all play the game. Oh, well, we're going to call in the feds. Give it to Mikey. Let them solve it. No. 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 So, I'll stop here for a minute. I think you get the point that I'm trying to make today. That we have work to do. And that is to, one, absolutely make somebody pay for these open, contemptuous acts against the communities. And number two, construct an alternative system. that suits your needs. I'll pause now, take a break, a little bit more, BB, and we come back to your calls at 888-874-4888.
I'm free now, baby. I'm free from your spell. Free, free, free now, baby. Baby, I'm free from your spell. Now that it's all over, all I can do is wish you well.
You're listening to PRN.FM. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Yatrice Lead, and it's time to hear from you at 888-874-4888. The call is free, so take advantage of it. From Pennsylvania, Peter, you're on the air.
Hi there, Yatrice. I've been a listener off and on after Gary's show almost every day, so it's great to finally get on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I've been around as long as you two, just in a different capacity. I've not been an activist until I retired about 5 years ago and really had the opportunity to look at all the injustices in the world. You know, I live in a gated community and all that other nonsense, but I'm the 0.1% of my particular population of the world that does something about it. I'm active just about in everything now, and not just marching to empty concrete buildings. We are actually going to people's homes. We have an attorney on staff with our groups, and we make sure that we never violate the law or get arrested, but we do have impact and things change. The problem is apathy. It just is, and it always has been. We go back, you and I go back to the 60s, and apathy has always been the problem. It's always been the small minority, even in the colors, that get things done, even in the women, even in the animal rights groups that get things done. I accept that. I don't begrudge that. That's just the way history changes. Dr. King had the same issue going on in his world. So, frankly, I've become very attuned. I've been reading a lot about a lot of the things I did miss in the 60s, like the Black Panthers, Huey Newton, Bobby Seale, and a lot of the other things. And I'm just telling you that there are those of us out here that are doing things about it. March Against Monsanto is coming up this week. I'm an active leader in that. I don't know what else to do to help people of color. I speak out against my white colleagues, friends, classmates who seem to be in a different world now that I've left that status quo, good altar boy executive world that I lived in for 40 years. So that's about all I want to say. I'm not going to complain. I'm just going to say that there are those of us out here doing it in tandem with our brothers and sisters of all races, creeds, and colors.
I agree, and thank you for that. That's also important to remember that this is on a very basic level. This is everybody's fight, but we have to acknowledge that there are communities that are really more impacted than any others. And in the history of our race-based context as a country, we can't ignore that. But thank you so much for your call. That was
It is a disgrace. It is a disgrace what they do to people of color. I am abhorred by it. I am abhorred by it. And I don't know what to do about it except what I am doing. I continue to do.
So thank you for doing what you do. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
From Queens, New York, Jose, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, my professor.
Good afternoon, Jose. How are you? You're my professor. How about that?
No, I'm only your elder. But whenever I listen to you, I just feel as if I'm in class. I always walk away with something.
Thank you so much.
You know, in my old age, after being around so many struggles and so many demonstrations and so many organizations. I kind of hope that being this close to the pearly gates, that when I go through, I would have a lot of good news to pass on to Brother Malcolm and Marcus Garvey and Fannie Lou Hamer and all of. I could have a conversation with them and said, tell them that those Christians down there, those black folks, those Christians who they have had an epiphany, this great epiphany, this great awakening, and that we have come to our senses, we have snatched back our senses from the oppressors, and we are finally on our way, we are making progress. But I'm afraid, I just don't see it. You know, my sister, I've been to a couple of the borough president, Eric Adams' so-called town hall meetings. He's been going around the town.
Now, I just want to let people know that Eric Adams is the borough president of Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, yes.
Right.
He has been going around having these town hall meetings, and it's about the police-community relationships. And I've been to a couple of them, and I asked him, what relationship is he talking about? I told him that he's not the one that should be having these meetings. I said, the mayor and the city council should be right here in front of us. They are the ones that we need to address. And plus, I want him to tell me who really runs the city, who controls the city. I said, is it the governor? Is it the mayor? Is it the city council? Is it Bratton? Is it Lynch? Is it the police department? Who runs this city and who is there that we can, as a people, for all this time we have been voting, plunking down our votes to these people, hoping that they will address our needs? And it's not being done. I said, Mr. Adams, please tell me who is in charge. Because say, you're having these forums here, and I don't know what is the aim, what is the purpose of these forums, because we're not dealing with anyone that has the power to make any changes. I said, please tell me. So my sister,
I'm curious, what was the answer?
Well, he didn't give me an answer because he was taking these making these rounds, and I want to find from him, what is the purpose of it? And I, to this day, I still don't know. I don't know, what is it? What is it for? He asked me if I don't think that they are good, because they are good police officers in the force, because he said most police officers are good. And he was in the force, so he should know better than that. So I told him that whenever you find the good ones, just bring them to me. Because I said, for all the things that's being done to our community, why is it the good cops not standing up? I said, why is it even according to their standards when they make an error and kill someone by an accident, according to them, or a mistake? Why is it I don't see any of them coming to the funerals of the victims and say, we are sorry? But when one of them are killed, the whole world turn out. Everybody turn out to support them. I just don't understand it.
So do you think, Jose, is the what do you think is the a reasonably good and workable response?
Well, Sister Utrecht, I believe that as a people, we have lost our minds. We don't seem to have the courage, the fortitude to stand up for our rights anymore. I've been to so many demonstrations and so many rallies, and I don't know what are we looking for. The desired effect is not there, because we rally and we demonstrate and so forth, and they just wait us out, and in no time at all we forget what we're rallying and demonstrating about, and business is as business as usual. And I am I believe in many of the things that Mr. Garvey has said, and I have a quotation right here that I look at from time to time. And Mr. Garvey says, and I quote, that if you are strong as a people, you have justice on your side. He said, if you are weak, you are at the mercy of the dispenser of justice. But he said, there is no justice but strength. There is no justice but power. And if you have sense and you want justice, you get power. Get it quick, get it anyhow, unquote. And Brother Malcolm said, by any means necessary. Sister Uhtred, I don't see our people fighting. We don't have any leadership out there. These cronies that we have, they have all acquiesced, and it is about their interest and their boss's interest, not the interest of the people who put them in office to go and sit at the seat of power and to see that we get our fair share of the loot that they are distributing.
I agree, but at the same time, what, even with that observation, which I agree 100% with, the question is, what is the alternative, and how is it to be articulated? Who is going to do this work?
It's not going to come from the established leadership that we have. It has to come from us, the grassroots people, and we have to be prepared to, if necessary, lives are going to be lost. Because it's in one of Bob's songs says, many more will have to suffer, and many more will have to die. And many more people don't understand that freedom is something that we cannot continue to keep asking for, begging for, and we have to be prepared to fight by any means necessary, and again be prepared come to the realization that some of us, many of us, are going to die. But if you're going to die, you have to die fighting for a cause. We are dying anyway. We are dying from many different reasons, and I believe in what Claude McKay said. I don't know if you remember the poem that Claude McKay wrote. And if it's all right for me to just repeat it, or just recite it real quick.
Sure.
Claude McKay said that if we must die, let it not be like hogs hunted and penned in an inglorious spot, while around us bark the mad and hungry dogs, making their mark at our cursed lot. If we must die, oh, let us nobly die, so that our precious blood may not be shed in vain. Then even the monsters we defy shall be constrained to honor us, though dead. O kinsmen, we must meet the common foe. Though far outnumbered, let us show us brave. And for their thousand blows, deal one death blow. What though before us lies, the open grave? Like men and women, we face the murderers, cover the pack, pressed to the wall, dying, but fighting back. My queens, we have no other way out of this thing. We cannot pray our way to freedom. We cannot beg our way to freedom. Politics, the old-fashioned politics, are not the way to our freedom. We have to fight. And I can't see it no other way, my sister.
Well, you gave us an extraordinary treatise here today, Jose. And I listened well.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you so much for making that contribution today. Again, thank you too, Peter, for bringing your points of view to the program today and offering them for our consideration. This brings us to the end of our program today. I hope it caused us to just re-examine as I used to say, read between the lies. This business of police reform, it's a joke. It is a joke. It's about shuffling the deck so that we become confused as to the order of the cards. But the cards are still there. And we still have this fight on our hands. And the fight isn't really just about a particular issue. The fight is about realignment of power. Really, that's what the fight is. Thank you so much for joining me today. Stay tuned. More coming up next right here on your favorite station, PRN.FM. And we'll see each other tomorrow. It's a great pleasure and an even greater privilege, I mean that, to be in your esteemed company. Bye-bye.